Let's do a little throwback.
From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. This week on Fragmented, it's episode 100. Kaushik and I are really grateful to everybody who's been with us along this journey. It doesn't matter if you've been here from episode 1, or if you're joining us here at episode 100, or anywhere else along the way. Now, this episode is going to be a little bit different. We're not going to be interviewing anybody. We're not going to be doing a decompress or a fragment or anything like that. But what we are going to do is answer a bunch of listener questions. A lot of folks had a bunch of questions for us, ranging from architecture to the Android SDK to podcasting, etc. Well, Kaushik and I do our best to answer it. Now, this episode is a little bit longer than normal, but again, this is episode 100. It's a little bit out of the norm. But without any further ado, we'll kick it off. And once again, thanks for listening.
But before we kick off today's show, I want to take a quick moment and thank our sponsor. It's our 100th episode, so it has to be a little different, right? Well, Rollbar wants to send a different message today. We all love refactoring. And apparently the developers at Rollbar also love refactoring. They recently did a complete overhaul of their client-side SDK library, and they want to give it out for a spin. So it's actually in alpha, and you can head on over to GitHub right now and take a look at, you know, all the refactoring work that they've done. I'll make sure to drop a link in the show notes to that GitHub repository. I went ahead and took a look, and I will say I was pretty impressed by how clean they've managed to make the code. So you should head on over to take a look at their code. If you have suggestions on things that you can improve, you should shoot them a note. I've said this before, I use Rollbar on a daily basis here at Instacart. I know our iOS folks use it, our backend folks swear by it, and we're not the only company. There are other big companies like Heroku, Twilio, Kayak, Zendesk, Twitch, who use and love Rollbar. Because with Rollbar, you get like the context and all the information you need to quickly identify and fix those bugs faster. So give Rollbar a try today. Head on over to rollbar.com/fragmented. And you get their bootstrap plan for free. So make sure to use our special link, which we'll also drop in the show notes, rollbar.com/fragmented. Thanks again, Rollbar. Now, on to the show.
Kaushik, you're back from your trip. Where did you go?
So I was in Canada. I was in actually Toronto for a very quick 1 week. I had some things that I had to take care of on a personal front, like my visa and renewals and stuff. Not terribly interesting, but it was fun. Toronto is pretty cool. Have you been to Canada?
I actually did go to Toronto for Android TO. I spoke there a year and a half ago or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that talk. Yeah, so I was there. I came back. It was a very short trip, so I was there, but it was a little, I had to like shift base for some time.
All right, anyway, well, that's enough non-Android stuff. So here we are, finally. I'm quite amazed that we're at episode 100. Can you believe it?
It is pretty crazy. I remember like the first time we started, like we said, hey, let's just take this till 10 and see if this thing even works out. And here we are, one more zero later.
Exactly. I told a few folks I was working with that I was going to be gone for a couple of hours because I had recorded episode 100. And like, wow, congratulations on 100. And to sit there and think about it, that we have 100 episodes under the belt is amazing. So thank you to all the listeners who have been there from the beginning, from the middle, and those of you that have just joined us. Thanks again for coming on this journey with us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I guess the last 99 episodes, we have kept it fairly technical. Like we've always sort of addressed like very technical topics that have interested us and stuff that we have actually used in our day-to-day work.
Yep.
But we thought maybe for the 100th episode, we'll tune it a little differently, I suppose, right? We wanted to take this chance to at least like appreciate our listeners and, you know, mm-hmm. the community for like sticking along with us, like you put it pretty well. So
yeah, so about a week and a half ago or somewhere right around there, we sent out a tweet telling folks we're going to do episode 100 and we'd like to answer a bunch of listener questions. And so a bunch of folks replied, and so that's what we're going to do today. Is we're just going to kind of hop through a list of these questions and kind of take them one by one. So Kaushik, do you want to kick us off with the first one?
Yeah. So the first question that we got, and we've tried our best to actually put the listeners' names who've like asked us these questions, but I apologize for the first few ones we actually didn't keep track. So whoever you are, if you've asked this question, thank you so much for asking this question. It's a great question. The first one is, what are your views on how Android is doing? You want to kick us off with your answer and then I can maybe like chime in with mine?
Yeah. So in my opinion, Android is doing phenomenal. If you just look at the whole global market share of where Android is at, it's just amazing the amount of penetration that the Android ecosystem has had from end to end. And if you take that a little step further and you start looking at some of the newer devices, such as, you know, last year's Pixel, this year's Pixel 2, some of these new devices are coming out, and even some of the, you know, I'd be surprised to say this, but from what I hear, some of the Samsung devices are actually pretty nice too, but it's amazing at the amount of folks that that have Android that are using it. And I have seen a lot of times when you can do things on Android, a lot of times that you can't do on iOS. I mean, there's always going to be trade-offs, but in my opinion, I think Android is doing phenomenal. I think it's going in the right direction. They made a lot of changes in Android O that's going to help take us to the next, you know, as I say, the next billion devices. So thumbs up from my perspective. What about you, Kaushik?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you've rounded it up pretty well. Android is definitely big. But the thing that really struck me the most is because I actually work in North America, I don't necessarily always get a good idea of how many people actually use Android. But when I actually go outside, when I went to Peru and I went to other places, South America, and like, you know, when I go back to India and I see Android is everywhere, you know.
Oh, yeah?
If I walk into like a bus, like 9 out of 10 devices is mostly Android, which is actually very heartening to see as an Android developer. But yeah, it's also bizarrely surprising because that isn't necessarily the uptake that we see here, like mostly in North America, right? Well, at least like in Silicon Valley where like I work. So that way, I mean, that is very encouraging, and it should be for most Android developers because it is going places. And like you rightly said, Google has been doing a fantastic job also on the hardware side with like actual phones. The phones are actually getting better. The operating system is also getting much better. And it is a joy to use now, right? The design is no longer what it used to be in the early days. Like with Material Design, they've really changed a bunch of those things. And it's pretty much a top quality product, right?
It is.
So I think, yeah, Android is definitely going up and up.
So we'll go to question number two here. How do you keep pace with the latest and greatest on Android? Kaushik, you want to take that?
I'll be honest. One of my biggest mechanisms is just by virtue of like, you know, doing this podcast, because we are very fortunate that we can actually get to speak to some of these leading folks. And in preparation for this podcast, right? Sometimes in order to be able to ask questions, we at least have to have like some knowledge, right? Because if you don't have a clue about any of these topics, it's hard to even ask questions to like even fathom, right? So, but otherwise, a lot of it is just, you know, like those weekends when I feel free and like, you know, when I'm prepping for like some of these episodes. That's pretty much it. What about you?
This is a really hard question to answer because back when I started in Android in 2008, the Android platform was much smaller. And even then, back then, it was still humongous, but you could at least kind of get a handle on the majority of the app. You know, you had some notifications, you had databases, and it just wasn't much stuff to go around. But now Android is at the place where it's so big that there's no way that I can learn all of the latest and greatest. Like, for example, if I want to know how to use Job Scheduler better than anybody else, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time in it. If I want to know how to implement Material Design, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time in design. So for me, what I usually end up doing, and I have the podcast rely on, as Kaushik said, to really help expose me to other topics. But then at the other side, you know, I also help run Castor.io. And so I have to learn a lot of those things to teach them over at Castor.io. But beyond that, as most developers aren't going to be doing to both of those things, what I do is very similar to what you do, is I'll have a side project, and the side project is actually the same. And so what I mean by that is it could be a to-do app. It could be an app that just tracks your, you know, your protein intake or anything like that. And it's very simple and it allows you to track things on a daily basis. So it has date, time, it has input fields, it has edit fields, has a database of some sort. And then you can do all different kinds of stuff with it. And then anytime something new comes out, I'll then apply that technology to that app. So I'm not changing the concept of the app. So I don't have this contextual switch going on in my head of, all right, well, now I'm going to build this, you know, taxi app, and now I'm going to build this, you know, to-do app and this calorie tracker. I just build the same app every single time, and I know what it's supposed to do. And then I don't have to worry about the semantics of the application because I already know how the app should work. I just have to worry about how to apply the technology to the app. And when do I do that? Very similar to you. It's going to be on nights. It's going to be on weekends, stuff like that. Furthermore, I also try to make sure I subscribe to any of the newsletters such as Android Weekly or Android Dev Digest, and just trying to keep up with what's the latest and greatest out there. As for what to choose, I think this is very much going to be dependent upon each individual person. Are you a person who really loves architecture? Then you're probably going to gravitate towards that and you're going to learn more of that. Are you someone who gravitates towards design? Then you're going to go there. Again, the landscape's so big. You just have to pick and choose what makes you happy and where you can apply that to your job and go after that.
I would also be remiss if I didn't mention, this is basically what we do, but we also very much actively listen to like other podcasts that are like, yes. We're lucky in the Android development world where we have so many of these resources. We have folks who basically are like, you know, they're giving great talks. We have amazing conferences. So, I mean, all of that is like, it's a given. That's why we don't mention, yep. Like, you know, a lot of that is our primary source too.
All right, so we'll move on to number three here. How did we meet? Gaushik, this is probably one of my favorite stories to tell, but why don't you go ahead and kick us off and tell your side of the story, and then I'll tell mine.
Yeah, so Anil Sanche asked this question. So there are two instances. There's how we met virtually, which is like, you know, and the other part that is how we actually met in person. Which one do you want to do?
Let's do it like the first initial one of like how the whole thing got kicked off. I mean, I think it was kind of serendipitous.
So the way it started was... both of us were like big podcast listeners. But it, again, like from my side, I love listening to podcasts. At the time, I had a pretty long commute. So I used to listen to a lot of like developer podcasts, right? And I thought to myself, hey, I'm an Android developer and there aren't enough Android podcasts, right? At the time, the only one was Android Developers Backstage, and Chet and Tor do a fantastic job with that. But that's just one podcast, right? And it wasn't enough. Like I was like ripping through those so fast. It got to a point where I was actually listening to more iOS developer podcasts than like, you know, Android podcasts. And I'm like, this is kind of crazy. Why aren't more people coming up with Android developer podcasts? Like it can't be that hard, right? So I just started like tweeting vigorously at the people that I knew. I was like, hey, you should really start a podcast. Hey, you should really start a podcast, right? And I don't know who it was, but at some point, like in some meetup or something, someone came up to me and said, well, you kind of have an idea about sound engineering, it sounds, so why not just do it yourself? And I'm like, huh, yeah, that probably I should walk the talk. So I said, okay, you know what, I'm going to try and start one and see, you know, it can't be that difficult. It was kind of difficult. I mean, very quickly, I kind of figured out there was no way in hell I could do this alone because it is like a lot of work, and having someone else also around helps you be a little accountable. And the funny thing is, at the time I was like, oh, you know, who could potentially be someone who helped me out, you know, and like, you know, show me direction. And I remember it was your talk, and I've told this in past episodes too. It is, I'll definitely put this in the show notes. It's one of the best talks I've seen, and this is of Don. And he talks of the lessons he learned by putting 3 or 5 top tier like apps, Android apps, in the Play Store. It was at the time it was so like informative to me, right? And I was like, wow, this dude seems to know what he's talking about, right? And like maybe I should like ping him. And it was out of the blue, like that. People keep asking us like, hey, how did you meet? Did you meet through like someone you knew? I literally just cold emailed Don and I said, hey, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. And as the stars like would have it, you know, out of pure dumb luck, because again, I mean, I can imagine I'm already pretty bad at email and replying to email. You already had like your book of Android Developers for Dummies, and you were giving talks. So I can only imagine how flooded your email inbox must have been. But somehow you happened to look at it and you replied and you said, hey, let's talk about this. This might actually be something. So why don't you tell that part of like the story?
Yeah, so you set it up pretty well there. I'll rewind here a little bit. You stated that you wanted a podcast on Android, and I felt the very same way, probably about a year, and probably even the same time that you did, but this is about a year and a half, 2 years prior to getting the email from you. I had actually started another podcast for Android developers, and we got about 2 or 3 episodes
That's true,
in.
Yeah.
And it just became too much work. And why was it too much work? Well, I was doing it with a friend named Joe. He was very busy. I was very busy. I knew how to do audio engineering already from my background. And so we were coming up with the show. We were recording the show. And then I was having to edit it and then publish it to, you know, the search engines and advertise it. And I literally just did not have enough time to do it. And so we just decided to go ahead and shutter it down. And I thought, well, it is what it is. It didn't work out. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years. This is in early 2015. I'm sitting at my desk at a co-working space, and this is at the time when I was starting to fall really behind on email, like to the point where there's like 800 emails in my inbox kind of level. And like you would, when you get into that situation, you kind of open up your inbox and you're like, oh goodness. And then you'll burn through 50 of them, then you'll close it down and do the 50 later. Well, I was in one of those situations. I got done with a meeting. I opened my email up very randomly, and there was this email at the top, and I don't remember what it was titled. I have to look it up. It was like, it was from you, and I look and I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. He's talking about doing a podcast for Android. And I was like, well, I still kind of want to do one. And I said, well, I remember replying back to you saying, hey, I've done this before. I didn't have enough time. I can't do the audio engineering. I know how, but it's just not going to work. Is this something that, you know, that you could take on? If so, then let's give it a shot. And then you reply back enthusiastically saying, yeah, of course, I have a background in audio engineering too. I can do all the editing and post-production, and then let's do it. And so then at that point, I think you and I just had a couple of emails back and forth, and then a couple of calls initially on Skype to figure it out. And then we decided at that point in time, like, hey, we both really don't know each other. We just kind of, like, I had read a couple of your blog posts. You'd watch one of my talks. We didn't even know if we were going to get along.
Yeah.
And sure. At that point, I was just like, okay, well, let's just give this. Let's do ourselves both a favor and like a friendly handshake of we'll do 10 episodes. And remember, I was in Arizona at the time. You were in San Francisco. We'll do 10 episodes. And then at that point in time, we'll kind of sit down, have a meeting saying, hey, are you enjoying this? Are you enjoying it? If so, we'll move on. If not, we'll go our own separate ways. And that's kind of how everything started off there.
Yeah, and to your credit, you came up with the idea of just doing like 10 episodes, right? And I think that was really smart, because I felt in many ways it relieved a lot of the pressure, right? Like, there wasn't like this awkward thing where like, oh, what if it doesn't work out? What if there's like hardly any chemistry? It's going to be tricky, right? And so I think that also helped, like having a small goal, just let's get there and then reevaluate, right?
Yeah, that was a big thing, because it gave both of us an out, because if for some reason you just like hated my guts, which you still do. I mean, let's be honest, I'm just kidding. Then we both had an out. But that was and to be honest, for folks out there listening, this is actually something that Kaushikai still do to this day. We don't do it as rigorous, but I'd say anywhere from every 10 to 15, 20 episodes, we'll get done recording one and kind of afterwards we'll chat on the phone and say, hey, are you still enjoying this? Is this something you still want to do? And the answer, and you and I both really believe on this, is something that Derek Sivers has in a blog post called Hell Yeah or No. And basically the theory behind that is, if you want to do something or someone asks you to do something, to do it, it has to be a hell yeah, meaning that yes, you like, it makes absolute sense for you to do it. Otherwise, it's a no. And we've kind of both followed that advice of every time we ask ourselves that question of, do we want to keep going? And it's either that hell yeah or no. And we've decided to keep going. And so here we are at 100.
One point I did want to bring up, for folks who don't actually know, sometimes it has been really hard, right? We've changed strategy a lot. And like, I guess like there are some questions that came up. There were times where both Don and I were so busy that we were like, hey, this is really, we want to do this, but like, you know, this process is not working because it's, we just simply do not have the time. Right.
Totally.
And I guess like one of the follow-up questions later on like talks about this, so we can go into some of the details, but we've had to like change a lot of things over time in order to be able to accommodate this. So we didn't like just magically get it right the first time. We've changed so many things. So,
oh yes.
All right. So that's how we met virtually, so to speak. I do think maybe we should quickly mention how we met physically. That was also like pretty funny. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, there's two aspects, I think, to this. Like, one, actually meeting physically the first time, and two, actually recording for the first time physically in the same place.
That is true. That is true.
So I don't remember the actual details. I don't even remember what episode. It might have been over 20 episodes that we did before we met in person. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that does sound right, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a client in Palo Alto, which is where Wedding Party, the previous company that you used to work at, was also located, and I had to go down there for for client work, and I just sent you a message saying, hey, I'm going to be in town next week, and hey, you want to meet up for lunch? And so we met up for lunch, and it was just like a surreal experience to be talking to someone for close to 6+ months over the phone all the time, and then finally meeting them face to face, and it was just a unique experience.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And the funny part, and I've told this in a previous episode, the funny thing is I've never actually seen like a complete picture of Don, because whenever I've seen Don, it was at like, you know, maybe he's giving a conference, so it's only the top half of Don, or like, you know, his profile picture. So the first time, like, I remember across the road where we were meeting, right? We were supposed to like grab lunch or something. And you said you'll meet me like on this corner sidewalk. And I looked at Don, I was like, oh yeah, I see Don, I recognize him. But I was like, whoa, something, he looks really tall. Like this person does not, he looks abnormally tall. And like, as I got closer, I was like, wow, you are super. And I think that was literally the first thing that I said. I didn't even say hello. Mm-hmm. I was like, you are really tall.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm about like 5'10", 5'11", but you're like 6'4", or something, right?
Yeah, 6'4". Yeah, a little over 6'4".
Yeah, so you can understand, like, just, yeah, I was taken aback by that, so.
It usually happens when I go to, if I work remotely for a client and then I show up to their office one day, like, just to do an on-site visit, I'll show up and they're like, yeah. I'm like, whoa, we didn't expect you to be so tall. I'm like, yeah, you usually see me sitting at my desk on video chat.
Yeah.
And then the other part, which was interesting, is that most people have always thought that we were in the same place recording because we're very focused on audio quality, and we use, you know, high quality professional equipment, and we make sure that there's no background noise and all that kind of stuff. So it sounds really professional. And most podcasts that way are done on site at the same place. But that's not the case with us. We figured out a way to do that. We'll talk about that later. So our first initial time that we ever recorded at the same time together was this last year at Google I/O. So if you listen to the Google I/O 2017 special, where it's outside, that's the first time Kaushik and I have ever recorded at the same time.
That is so funny, right? I mean, after like all this time, it's been like, what, 2.5 years now? Which is another crazy thing to imagine. But the first time we actually met was just this last I/O, right? Where we both were on site. Because we did try a couple of times before to actually meet and, like, you know, for other conferences. But it just never worked out for some reason, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, never did.
Yeah, so, yeah, that, interestingly enough, that was the first time that we've actually, and it was kind of bizarre because this is the first time I was actually seeing Don's mouth move as we were recording. Usually I just, like, visualize this in my head, but yeah, it was the first time we actually saw that.
That's kind of creepy.
It is. I want to kick off the next question, and this is from our mutual friend who's also been on the show, Jesse Wilson. He asks a fantastic question. What is your favorite Android phone, and what is your favorite Android, not a phone?
That's a great question. For me, my favorite Android phone, which is actually kind of embarrassing to say even right now, has been my Nexus 6P. I haven't upgraded. I didn't get a Pixel last year. I'm ordering a Pixel 2. So I'm hoping that the Pixel 2 will be my new favorite device. For the thing that's not an Android phone, I'm probably going to have to lean on, it's kind of a tie right now between Android things and Android TV. And the reason why I say it's a tie is because I have an Android, like an old ADT1 development device, and that's just pretty cool. It's just fun. You can play some games on it. You got a controller. It's just really cool. But the Android things is really interesting to me because there's so many different things that you can do with these different devices out there, and I think there's a ton of opportunity out there for it. What about you, Kaushik?
Definitely the Pixel phone. It is. I wanted to bring this up, though, and maybe we would, like, you know, go into like the details at a later point.
Yeah.
I almost ordered the Pixel 2 yesterday, and I want to ask because I was really tempted. I did want to get like the new and the greatest stuff. I added it into my cart, and like they have like this excellent trade-in program for those who don't know, so you can trade in your old phone, and it's like pretty decent. If you have like a working Pixel, that you get like around $350 back, right?
They do it for a 6P too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for 6P as well? Oh, that's
yeah. They're going to give me like $195.
Oh, that's pretty rad. Like, you know, the fact that they're doing that. But you know, the funny thing is, I wanted to go with the bigger. I'm a small size phone. I hate the larger size phones, as like you know, you and most listeners know. But I was like, the bezels on the smaller one was like really large, and I was like, it looks so similar to my existing Pixel, and I'm like, I can't justify like you know spending the money to actually, get that phone. So instead, I said, hey, maybe I should just try the bigger Pixel too, because like you know, it has a smaller like bezel, and it just seemed like a nicer phone. So I added it into the cart, like all the way till the end. I was going to hit checkout, but the funny thing is, with taxes, it came to around like $950 or $920 or something along.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, "Well, this is the first time that I'm actually pretty happy with my existing Pixel that I can't justify spending $900 just to get like a mild upgrade, right?" And I know the phone's way better; the camera's like almost 4 to 5 times better. But even so, for this is like, and I wanted to talk to you about it. This is the first time in a very long time where I haven't immediately said, take my money, right?
Yeah.
Like I've not, usually I never think twice, but yesterday was like the first time where I was like, maybe I should hold on for like, you know, Pixel 3 or something. And I'm curious. Did you order the Pixel 2?
I have not ordered it yet. My plan is to order it in the next couple of weeks, but I'm on also of a very similar mindset to you, is that I can't spend that money to upgrade a phone every year if I'm not going to get this humongous upgrade out of it. So I bought the 6P actually a year after it came out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was like actually last July or I don't know. It was last March or something like that, 2 Marches ago. And so a Pixel came out and I looked, I was like, wow, yeah, I'd like to do that. And I did the same thing. I put it in the cart and I looked at the price. I was like, oh, whoa, like, that's a lot.
It hurts a little, right?
I did the same thing with the Pixel 2 just a couple of weeks ago. Right as soon as they announced that, I put it in the cart, did the trade-in deal. I'm like, okay, well, I'll get the money back after they get the device and verify it works, then they'll credit me. But even then, I was looking at the smaller device because I have a 6P now. I'm done with this humongous thing. Like I have this story. My wife and I bought these new portable batteries. You know, you buy them to charge your phone or whatever.
Right.
When you're on the go. And they're big ones. You can charge your phone like 5 times, but it's cool. Like we just keep in the car or whatever when we're on the road. And I look at this thing. I'm like, man, look at this thing. This thing is huge. My wife's looking at me. She goes, that thing is as big as your phone. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And then she's like, put your phone on top of it. And I put my phone on top of it. My phone's bigger than it. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I'm a big guy, and this thing still sticks out of my pocket when it's in my pocket. Like, the top quarter inch, half inch, like, hangs out of my pocket. And I was like, this, like, I get when I go on anywhere and I'm going to sit down at a movie theater, I'm afraid it, like, falls out of my pocket because half it's hanging out. So,
yeah.
I'm just going to go with a smaller phone. And then I'm like you, I probably get a new phone like once every 2 years.
I will say, though, the 6P to the Pixel 2 is going to be like a kick ass upgrade.
This thing's a brick right now.
The 6P, quickly fell out of the favor, right?
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the next question. So we have a question here. Actually, it was a reply to Jesse Wilson and the guy's name was Pratik Phoenix. I'm not sure if that's the name or just the username, but thank you, Pratik, for sending the question in. And it is, what does your setup look like? Kaushik, you're very passionate about your setup, so why don't you tell us what you got going on?
By setup, I think he means both our podcasting setup and the computers and the stuff that I use. So I'll quickly run through. I did have like a much more elaborate recording setup before, and if folks are interested, you can ping us and we'll tell you what it was. But I've actually tried to simplify it more. The mic that I use now is the Shure Beta 87A. It's a fantastic mic. It is a little pricey. It is not something that you would just get casually like off Amazon. It is a little pricey, but it's a mic that has worked really well so far. And the device that I use to connect the mic, this is an XLR mic for those who know. So this is not like a USB mic that you can plug in directly to your laptop because of latency reasons. I do use another audio interface, and this is called the USB Pre 2. So that's the interface that I use. Also pretty pricey. I think this one goes about like $800 or something. So
holy moly, I didn't know you had that one.
Yeah, so but the advantage with this is I've been able to get rid of a lot of the other like sound dampening equipment that I've had. And again, I used to do sound engineering in the past, so I had a lot of like these high-end equipment before. But I have actually reduced it to just these two. So if you're willing to put down that, like, you can get a pretty rad setup quickly with just these two things. So it's simplified, but oh boy, yeah, I had to pay for the simplicity. So that's the recording setup that I have at the moment. I have my monitor. I'm very big on, like, you know, getting as much monitor screen space as I can. So I have like this huge LG ultra wide display. I'll add a link to the show notes. I don't remember the model name. LG does not have very pretty model numbers, but it's like the ultra wide display. So it's the curved wide display. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I'm a big Apple MacBook user. I was almost going to upgrade to like a Mac Pro at some point. And I think I am very tempted because I use the thing enough, like, you know, for our production and, like, you know, even for mobile development, I honestly would want to upgrade at some point. But right now I'm just using a standard MacBook Pro 15 inch. It's literally just, like, you know, docked on my side. And, like, yeah, that's the thing that's been serving me pretty well for the past like 3 to 4 years actually now. So that's my setup. Well, what does your setup look like, Don?
So I am the Walmart version of your Tiffany's. So what I mean by that is, yeah, I do run the same mic as you. So I do run the Shure Beta 7 87A microphone. As you said, it's a pricey mic. I actually have two mics depending upon if I'm at home or if I'm my home if I'm my office. In my home office, I run a Heel PR40 mic. Again, probably very similarly priced to the Beta 87A. However, my audio interfaces are much cheaper. One of them in my office is a Focusrite 2i2.
Oh, yeah.
And that runs about, I think, 80 or 90, maybe 100 bucks. And then the other one that I have is a Blackjack Onyx, and those run about $99. Both, again, allow me to do what I need to do. Again, just some over-the-ear headphones, kind of whatever you preference. I can't spend $400 on over-the-ear headphones. It's one of those things I just can't pull the trigger on. So mine are probably anywhere between, you know, 50 to 100 bucks. As for computers, I'm still running a MacBook. This is, to be honest, a lot of folks ask me, like, well, hey, if, you know, if I'm going to get a computer, what kind of computer should I get? And I said, well, you know, if you want, get a MacBook. But what I refer everyone to do is actually go to Apple's refurbished store, and you can just type that into Google. And what that is it's a store where Apple takes the trade-ins and then they refurbish them and they sell them back to the consumer. That's actually where I bought my first MacBook that I ran on for all the way, and probably through the first 30 episodes back. It was a 2011 model. I had it for like 4 years. Very long time. And then I bought another one in 2014. And so I literally try to run these things into the ground. I've read so many bad things about the new MacBooks with the touch bar and the weird key travel. Yeah. They're really apprehensive to even upgrade right now. But that is what it is. I don't plan on going to anything desktop oriented because I value my mobility. Sometimes I'll be editing, you know, one time I was editing an episode a couple of weeks ago in my wife's grandmother's apartment in New York City, you know, and so right. I can't do that if I have a big desktop. So I have a laptop for everything. Monitors, I run a Dell 52715H. It's just a 27 inch Dell HD monitor. Mm-hmm. I got from Best Buy because they'll do price matching, and it was one down the street, and it was a good deal. Again, I don't pull the trigger on the Apple big monitors or anything like that. And then, of course, we can get into a whole different conversation on a different day about ergonomic stuff, but we'll save that for another episode.
So the next question is a really good one. This is by Tazo Maniac, which is a pretty cool handle. Tazo Maniac asks the question, what is your favorite class on Android from the Android platform?
Yeah, it's going to be Fragment.
Oh, wow. That is that's a pretty trolly answer, man.
I had to troll that one. That was a good one. I can't leave that one. That door was wide open. I had to take it.
Yeah.
You know, this one's actually pretty hard to do because, I mean, Android's a humongous, you know, ecosystem. But I don't know. If I had to say, I don't know, it would probably just end up being Vue because everything inherits from Vue that I put to the screen.
So the views?
Just Vue.java.
The thing I'm going to go for is like the Canvas class.
Oh, you know? That's good.
I recently used this. So at Instacart, basically we had like a timer kind of view that we had to build, and it was like a custom timer that we're going to show our shoppers. Mm-hmm. And so like we wanted to like make it a little more pertinent and have like good animations and stuff. So I actually built this from scratch, and I used the Canvas class, like, you know, because we really wanted to control the animations because it's like probably one of the most important parts of, like, you know, when a shopper is picking up something. So I did this and I realized how versatile it was. And it also reminded me of the time when we talked to Gabriel when he was talking to us about Lottie, right? And how they use Lottie to, like, actually build these animations. Mm-hmm. It was pretty crazy. Like, this is a really well thought out class. I could do some really crazy things in, like, a pretty relatively easy way. The funny thing is, initially when I started, I was like, oh, Canvas, the name sounds very daunting. And I was like, oh, I don't really want to deal with all that low-level stuff, right? But as I've become a little more comfortable with some of these things, when I actually delved into the Canvas class, folks should just, as a side project, try, you know, using the Canvas class and trying, like, some of the funky stuff where you actually draw custom views using the Canvas class, because it is really powerful. And it's actually one of the really well-thought-out classes, in my opinion. So I'm going to go with that. And in terms of API, it's a little tricky because we love to hate on Google for, like, some of the APIs that come in, right? But I will say this is, like, the more modern one. I am going to say Room's newer APIs, like, you know, their whole DAO and using the retrofit-like interface. I'm really liking that. It's the first time where, you know, after adding the library, like, almost everyone, like, on my team has also been like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, you know, the API is really nice. So on an API consumption wise, I'm going to go with Room. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So that takes us to number 8. This question is by Hans Dorfman. And he actually posted a number of questions here that that will go down. I'm going to read off the questions and then Kaushik, I'll let you go first and you can give your answers and then I'll go. So question number 1 is, what's your favorite Android library? Mm-hmm. Question number 2 is, how the hell are you able to produce episodes that frequent? Question number 3 is, who came up with the name of the podcast? Number 4, from where do you know each other? So a couple of these have already been answered. Kaushik, kick us off.
So what is your favorite Android library? Surprise, surprise. It is RxJava. It isn't necessarily just an Android library. It is like a Java library, obviously. I love RxJava, right? Like, I also, it's almost to the point of it being nostalgic. Like, some of the early work that I did for the Android community was with RxJava. It was the first time I happened to meet some very prominent developers. It's the first thing where it really got me hooked. And in many ways, it felt like I was learning something new while still being in the Android world. So RxJava is definitely the library that I'm going to go for. And, you know, you can, I've, over the podcast, we have talked multiple times why I like RxJava so much. Mm-hmm. How the hell are you able to produce episodes that frequently? Honestly, I credit a lot of this to Don, because Don, for folks who don't know, Don works with, like, military precision. Like, if you see the number of things he does, it's insane. I don't even, sometimes I even doubt if he's human. Like, I think this is just, like, you know, advanced AI, like, you know, that I'm having a podcast with. Because, and you wrote a recent blog post, and I'll make sure I add that in the show notes, which is also good, which you talk about how you actually get so much stuff done. We are very diligent about what we do, right? And we alluded to this previously. In the early days, what we used to do is we used to record an episode one every week. We used to edit, produce it, release it that the beginning of the next week. And then, you know, just that cycle went on. And very quickly, we found that was not working for us, because, you know, it felt like we were always just doing work on this. And this is all in addition, like, you know, this is all in the free time that we get, where, like, we're working as full-time developers and, like, you know, we have our own, like, personal lives. So it quickly didn't work out. Like, I think it was around, do you remember which episode it was? Like, maybe it was around, like, the 30 range, right? 30 or 40.
Yeah, it was 40. Like 28, 29, something like that.
Yeah, where, like, you know, we had one of those conversations where, like, hey, you know, I think, like, you know, Don and I had basically just said, like, dude, this is really hard. Like, you know, we love doing it and we want to get as quickly as possible to the final product. But, like, you know, this process is taking a long time. And so, you know, we iterated over the process. Typically, what we do now is we actually batch a whole bunch of episodes, and we found that works really well for us. So I think over, like, the beginning of the month, we spend, like, over 2 weeks, we just, like, you know, go all in, record all these episodes. Obviously, sometimes, like, our schedule changes, so that's how it works. We also are part of, like, the Spec Network now. And one reason that we did that was because we wanted to be able to offload some of the things. And I think, Don, you're big on productivity. So there was one point where you told me this, right? If there's anything where I'm not the most essential part, I try to find someone else to do this for us, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't necessarily have to be there to do that part of the process, honestly, you shouldn't be doing it, because time is probably the most valuable currency that we have at this point, right? So that we took that to heart, and like that's why like the Spec Network, they help us a lot with like some of the final mastering things that we don't necessarily have to sit and do ourselves that we were doing before. So that does help a little, like also with like streamlining. And Sarah, who works with us, is amazing. So that way we have found something that works where we're trying to get to the most essential parts where we are probably required, and we have found a way to work that way. So that's the secret sauce, so to speak. Who came up with the name of the podcast? I'll tell you what my initial proposition for the name was. Mm-hmm. At the time, there was only Android developers backstage. And, you know, the way it was set up is Chet and Tor talk about, like, you know, how the sausage is made on the background, right? Like, behind the stage is how, like, they come up with Android. They talk to other Android engineers. So I thought it would be cute to call this podcast Android Developers Front Stage. So, you know, after, like, you know, from this side of the screen, how it would work, you know, how as Android consumers of the core Android APIs, I thought it would be pretty cool to call it Android Developers Front Stage. But
that's funny.
But Don came up with the name Fragmented. And yeah, I mean, like, you can probably tell, like, when you get through these questions, you can tell us, like, you know, what was the inspiration there. But I think we did pretty well with Fragmented. All right. So from where do you know each other? We answered this question. Like, we didn't literally know. I just cold emailed Don, and that's how we came to know each other. So yeah, why don't you take us through your answers for this?
For sure. So number one, what's your favorite Android library? Immediately, as soon as I thought of this, Dagger came to mind, and that's going to have to be my favorite library. Ever since I've came to Android, my allure has been dependency injection. I was very big into dependency injection in other languages prior to Android. And so prior to Dagger, we were all using RoboJuice, and I helped contribute on that library. And when Dagger came out, I migrated to Dagger. So it's just one of those things where I find myself just naturally gravitating towards a dependency injection for decoupling purposes and so forth and unit testing, and it just buys me a bunch of that framework. I can do a lot of stuff. Sure, I don't get streams like if I were to use RxJava, but you know, I can still build apps without it. But and again, we can build apps without Dagger too, but it feels like it gives me a little more flexibility. Number two, how the hell are you able to produce episodes that frequent? Kaushik really went into this in depth. I think that's what he said was very key. As he said, I almost am militaristic about my time management. And that's the truth. I don't watch much TV. I go to bed at a certain time. I get up every morning at 5 to 5:30 in the morning. I utilize every single free moment that I have to get something done. And as you said before, we were building those episodes one by one, and then we decided to start batching. And for folks that aren't familiar with what that means really is we'll actually sit down and we'll record 1 to 3 episodes in a day. And so we'll record those three. We'll have a guest in the morning, we'll have a guest at night, and then maybe we'll do a fragment individually during the day. So possibly could record 4 or whatever. And then what that enables us to do is we already have them recorded. We can then, you know, upload them, we edit them later when we have free time, we're commuting, hanging out, you know, when we have that free time with family or whatever, or we're doing something. And then we can publish them out. So it's enabled us to have a lot more, less pressure is what I guess you could say. And that's how we're able to push them out, because we can just queue them up and get them out. How do we come up with the name of the podcast? As Kaushik said, I came up with that one, and it kind of just popped into my head randomly one day when I was sitting at the office. And the reason why it came up is like, well, what is Android? What would be an interesting spin on Android that like only Android people would kind of get, or maybe mobile people would kind of get? And they'd be like, ah, I see what you did there. And that's kind of where it came. I'm like, well, what is Android? I'm like, well, at the time, and still kind of is, like, Android is fragmented. Like all these devices, and there was always the big argument at the time of like, Android's not fragmented. We have a big, large community ecosystem. And then finally, eventually it came out, yeah, we know it's fragmented. We're trying to fix it. And so I just kind of threw the name over the wall to Kaushik. Like, what do you think about this name, Fragmented? And he's just like, yes, that's it. And that's kind of how we decided to go with it.
Next question. Rajesh Raman asked this question. Can you talk about the shift towards AI and what it means for Android?
Yeah, so I'll hop on this one real quick. What I think a lot of this means at this point is, well, if you were to look at, if you were at Google I/O, you saw the size of the TPUs, the tensor processing units. Like, yeah, they're not small by any means. Like, it's not going to fit in your pocket. they're very powerful. I mean, imagine how hot they probably get from all the processing and number crunching that they're doing. So where I'm going with this is basically saying, like, look, Android is just a client. It's just a client in some type of architecture. And most likely we're going to be talking to some remote server that's, you know, gathering data. And it might talk to some type of AI or machine learning platform in the background. I think what that means for us, though, is it's going to open up different opportunities for different markets and different different things like that. Just for example, this morning I woke up and Google Photos said, "Hey, we now support dogs and cats. We'll recognize your dog or your cat." I was like, "No way!" And I opened it up, and sure enough, it recognized the puppy that we got a few months back. And I was like, "Wow, it really does! It recognizes the puppy." And so I think it opens up more opportunities. And it's going to we'll see where it goes in the future, but. In regards to Android, Android is just a client, just as if you were to write it on the web or if you were to write it in iOS, it's just going to consume the content. Maybe if we get to a point where these, you know, some of this number crunching can be done on the device on some type of, you know, mesh network, then we'll see how that goes. But I don't think we're there yet.
I don't think I have anything more to add. All I'll just say is it's funny because like the announcement with the Google Pixel 2, like it was all about the AI, you know, Google's really going big on it. So I would suggest you look at the new Google Pixel 2 sort of announcement. Like, you know, it really shows the power of AI and like what it means to Android. I think, like, you know, that sort of like summed it pretty well. And yeah, Don and I have been talking about this in the past. So, you know, keep your ears open. You know, who knows? Maybe one of these days we'll talk about it. So,
all right. So number 10 here, this one is from the username Sasamka. If I mess it up, I'm sorry. The question is, what is your favorite app with regards to design on the Play Store?
I presume this means which app do you think is designed really well on Android, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a tough one. I have more than one answer, but I'm going to just go and pick one. And I'm going to say the Robinhood app. That's the first one that comes to mind. It's done really well. If I had to pick a second one, I would say the Square Cash app. And like this is purely in terms of design, right? Like in terms of design, I think they have a high bar and like they do some really cool stuff. So we'll add links to both of those. So in terms of design, I think they're like top notch.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. This one's a hard question to answer because the number of apps that are out there is just is amazing. I think if you go to the website, it's called Android Niceties. I think that's how you say it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
You go to that website, they show all of the, you know, a bunch of really beautiful designed apps. And I could go on there and tell you I like 25 of those, but I may not use any of them at all. And that's kind of the case. That's what I'm kind of getting at here is it really depends on what apps you use. And I think for me, I'm going to rephrase this question of like, what's my favorite app that I use in regards to design? And I'm going to have to just go back to the Play Music app because this is an app that I use all the time. Mm-hmm. It's simple. It does what I need. Has a lot of material concepts, and it just works. All right, so we'll go to Valentin, and it's how do you pick your topics and or guests, and how far in advance do you prepare for episodes?
Ooh, good one. How do we pick our topics or guests? I don't think we necessarily have a very straightforward formula per se. Like I said before, we are pretty fortunate in that we do know some folks. Through the GDE program, you know a whole bunch of people. Honestly, the way it works is Don and I have like this shared document, which has like a complete list of ideas. So listeners actually provide us a lot of like input too. Like they say, hey, we think it'll be cool if you do this. And so essentially any idea that comes our way, we throw it into this document. And, you know, as we feel it picks up steam or if either Don or I have actually tried this thing out for real, like, you know, in our day jobs, or if we come across someone like a friend that we know who's like got onto this and, you know, we see they've put a blog post or talked about it and it's something that we are interested in as well. We just ping him and say, hey, would you like to be on the show? It's pretty much, I think the biggest advantage we have is like we're Android developers in our day job. That's a large portion of what we do is that, you know, the podcast is truly just on the side. And so because of that, we have a lot of ideas as we work through our day jobs. And I think, at least for me, and I'm pretty sure that's the case for you too, like that's where we derive a whole bunch of our ideas to go on the show. With guests, you know, it's like an organic thing. We don't necessarily have a prescribed procedure. How far in advance do you prepare for episodes? we've gotten good about this. In the early days, well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but in the early days, we used to do way more preparation, but that was part of also what made it pretty tricky. I say this on episode 100. I think we've been pretty good. Like, we don't necessarily spend as much time anymore. We do spend a lot of time thinking about the topic, but we do it over the course of the week. We don't necessarily sit down to say, okay, I'm going to prepare for episode X. We do, however, like, because we do have guests on the show and, like, you know, it's unfair to, like, you know, catch them completely off guard. We do try our best to prepare, like, maybe a week or two in advance, or at least give them an idea as to we are thinking. Again, a lot of this is not scripted. Like, we don't script any of this, as you can see. So, yeah, that's basically how we go about it.
Yeah, I think you covered it very well. I think the only thing that that I have to add to that is, you know, you said how far in advance do you prepare for those episodes? The thing that you said that was very interesting is very early on, we did a lot of preparation, and you kind of glossed over that. And I wanted to bring that up a little bit is very early on, probably the first 10 episodes, when we prepared for an episode, we literally had 25 pages to 30 pages of notes.
That is true. That is true.
Like, oh, there was like a book written about every episode. We covered everything, like almost word for word what we were going to say. And we realized that that's just way too much work. And so we just kind of dialed it back and started going with the flow a little bit more. Again, we still do the preparation when we have guests on, so we don't catch them off guard. Here's what we'd like to talk about. Here's some of the sample questions we might ask. And then we kind of let it take an organic course from there.
Mert Simsek asks, if you had a chance to change a class in the Android source, what would you change? Fantastic question.
For me, I think, and this kind of goes, kind of talks about our next question here a little bit more, that which we'll get to in a second. Mm-hmm. I'd probably end up changing activity just to make it more testable, so it wasn't so concrete and hard to get into. Maybe I could do constructor injection. Maybe I could do something like that. But I would love to make the activity class a lot more testable. What about you?
Oh, that's a good one. I thought about this, and I feel, again, this is not necessarily purely from like the developer perspective, but I like to think if there was one thing that I would hope that they changed, it was like actually the animations library. Like, one thing that I've always dinged Android about is iOS. If you see, the animations are really fluid, right? And it's not just about the actual power of the hardware or the device. A large part of it is also just, but I feel for some reason, it's only in Android O that I think like physics-based animations have come in, right? A lot of these things, I just feel iOS, the defaults seem really well thought of. Like, you know, the natural animations are just so much more fluid. And for the longest time, this was one of my biggest pet peeves. I do know like they're changing a large part of this now. So I guess there are good things to come. But I still think in pure animations, like if you just like went with the stock defaults, for some reason, I still feel like the animations on iOS are more fluid. And having talked to many of my colleagues as we build features together, sometimes things that I have to spend like a day working on, they do it in like, you know, in like literally half an hour, they have the whole thing done. So I feel a large part of that has just like worked really well for them. And I'd like to see if like, you know, Android gets to that point where like it's so fluid that there's no distinction.
That's a good one. It's really good. I completely agree with you. The animation stuff has kind of been kind of rough. All right, so let's move on to number 14. This one's from Jove M. Again, sorry if we mispronounced that there. But he asks, if you were architecting the Android SDK, which part would you have done differently? Why and in what way?
Ooh, interesting. I guess it's pretty similar to the one that I mentioned. Again, a large part of this is things are changing so much now, right? My pet peeve for the longest time was, in large part, the Android architecture components, right? What we call the Android architecture components now. It wasn't necessarily that I thought it was, like, I didn't understand how to do it before. My biggest gripe has always been, I shouldn't have to think about this, right? These are such basic things that I would want the defaults to just work. And also for more folks who are like getting into Android development, they shouldn't have to think about so many of these things, right? We just should have like a good database sort of library. We should, this whole lifecycle components thing shouldn't necessarily be so convoluted. I get why it is like this, but I shouldn't have to know that, hey, what exactly is the view lifecycle again? How is it different from the fragments lifecycle? How is it different from like the Android activity lifecycle? A large part of all these things, the view models, and I mean the one that's part of Android architecture components. Like so many of, just imagine a world where we had the Android architecture components thing from the get-go, right? What if Android 1 had this? Imagine how much nicer our code would have been, right? So I feel that has been my biggest gripe. And I would just say, like, you know, better late than never. We have this now, and I think it works well, but that has been my biggest gripe. What about you?
I'm going to rely almost on the same answer I had before. And if I were to re-architect, or if I was architecting from the beginning, I would try to make it much more testable. The majority of my time outside of Android, where I spend my time programming, is actually either going to be majority in Rails or maybe a lot of times in JavaScript. And I find that it's much easier, especially in Rails, because that was kind of built in as just part of the platform to enable testing. And when I'm writing an application in Rails, I feel like I can actually write a test for it and get it under control there. And it makes my life a lot easier, because then I can just, my test is there. As with Android, it's still quite difficult to get your tests, you know, application running in test, especially if you're depending upon a third-party API and you want to run Espresso tests on an automated fashion. Well, what are your options then? Maybe you can use WireMock, maybe you can use Mock Web Server, but you still have to set up all that plumbing code for you underneath the hood, and it's just quite complicated. So I really wish that if I were able to do it, I'd build in much more testing support. Now, again, hindsight's 2020, and I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. We also have to remember that Android started off as a camera operating system.
That is true. Wow. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So a lot of folks don't know that Android was originally built to be a camera operating system, and then it kind of morphed into a phone operating system. And back in, you know, 2005, I think, is when Android officially started development, or earlier. These devices were not even as close to as powerful as they are now. They were, you know, and they still are embedded devices. So the resources were very limited. Back early on in the Android documentation, it specifically said not to use dependency injection because it will cause reflection and it's too slow for the embedded device. Times have changed. So again, this is all hindsight's 2020 type of thing.
It is kind of ironical that it started out as a camera operating system, because that's another pet peeve of mine. The camera APIs are, like, you know, they could definitely use some love too.
Oh man, that's a whole topic in itself.
Okay, but on to more positive things. Viresh Kalmat asked, he asks three questions. All three are pretty good. MVP or MVVM and reference for each. That's question one. Question two, React Native, Xamarin, Cordova, Doppel or Native? If native, how do you convince management? And third question, why to use RxJava? How do you convince the team about it?
Yeah, so I'll kick us off here. MVP or MVVM. I have done a lot of MVP over the years. I've recently started doing a lot of MVVM. Mm-hmm. I've always felt the MVP with the passive view variant of it has a ton of boilerplate, a ton of ceremony. Mm-hmm. Like I'm getting like all over the place. It does allow me to test the logic, but I always just felt like I was writing so much code to get that. MVVM, on the other hand, if done correctly, is actually a lot less boilerplate. And I've slowly started coming over to really enjoy MVVM. I was just writing a bunch of tests this morning for a view model that I created to help manage view state and stuff like that. And it was awesome. I'd probably say I'm split 50-50 right now, but I'm migrating towards MVVM. A reference for each, I've done a course on Castor.io for MVP, and there's one currently in production for MVVM, so I'm going to be biased and say that's where I would go to learn it. Number two, React Native, Xamarin, Cordova, Doppel, or Native? And if it's Native, how do you convince management? This is the key point here is at the end. If Native, how do you convince management? Management right now is seeing, and what I mean by management, I'm seeing C-level executives, CIO, CTO, VP level, especially in larger companies, are seeing React Native come up as this thing that could work. There are many companies out there that are actually using React Native successfully, and they see the value add, like, hey, we don't have to write this feature twice. We can just do it once and it will work. So if native, how do you convince management? It really depends on the application, if you ask me. If you're building a game, well, you're probably not going to want to do it in React Native. You probably want to do it in native. It's just going to make much more sense. You can have much more fine grain, lower end control of all those different types of things. Now, if you're building a forms over data application, or you're going to be collecting insurance data and submitting a form or whatever, React Native in that situation, yeah, probably go for it. There's probably not too much stuff that you need to do there. Depends on the situation there. There's also companies that have a native layer that sits under React Native to handle all of the network communication, the caching, the push notifications, and stuff like that. Again, really depends on the situation. But if I were to have to choose of any of those, if I'm going to leave native out of it, it's because I do mainly do native now. If I was to choose between React Native, Xamarin, Cordova, or Doppel, I would have to go React Native. I've always been under the assumption and believe that JavaScript HTML would come to the mobile device and start to rule there. I think we're starting to see the tip of the iceberg. And number three. Did you have something you want to say, Kaushik? Okay. Number three, why to use RxJava and how to convince the team about it. Why to use RxJava? It's basically like everyone said, it's, you know, you can kind of put all these, chain all these streams together. So if I'm pulling in something from Retrofit, I can use the observable there, and maybe I'm going to be doing some mapping to some other data types here, and then I'm going to kind of be filtering on these other data types and returning it back through some maybe service layer pattern or something like that. Then I can say, hey, it's going to return these objects that maybe have been mapped from two or three different API calls, and it just makes it a lot cleaner. How do you convince a team about it? This is one of those things that I've always had found difficult, and the best way usually is to find a very complex problem that you can solve with Rx and implement it in Rx. Say, now look how easy this is using Rx, and here's how it was before this humongous blob of spaghetti code. Check it out in Rx. Here's what the features it gives us. The errors are propagated down, etc. And then kind of walking it through with the team and having people actually play with the code in their own code base usually gets them a lot more comfortable with it. What about you, Kaushik?
The first question is very similar to what you said, MVP or MVVM. I'm big on view models. I've actually been pretty big on view models right from the early days. So I'm probably more biased towards view models, like the whole testability thing. And like definitely, like you mentioned a key point, like the boilerplate, right? So I think you answered that pretty well. The second question, React Native, Xamarin, Cordova, Doppel, or Native. I don't have necessarily as much experience in these, but the way I would answer it is I want to use Xamarin because I do like C#. I think C# is a beautiful language. However, if I had to pick one more responsibly, I probably might pick React Native. And that's mostly, like you said, I truly do believe, like, you know, it's unfortunately, this is like a battle that's like that's way past its point. JavaScript is becoming a very it's becoming a serious contender in this land, right? So I think that would be the responsible choice. If native, how do you convince management? Again, like my first instinct was like, you don't necessarily have to convince management. Like, you know, if you're finding it hard to convince management, then maybe it's time to rethink your decisions, right? I do think I like to think I'm first a software engineer before I am an Android developer, right? So you have to do what works well. We choose to do native, or at least, like, you know, many of us choose to do native because React Native hasn't reached the points of being able to work as fluidly as native. You know, that is the reason. It's not because of like this instinct, like this Luddite instinct to not want to learn like something new, right? It is purely because we find native works better. So, I mean, the minute I feel React Native works better, like I will switch. Like, you know, I don't necessarily feel too devoted to the platform. But right now, I think that just works. And the way you convince them is like you point out to these examples, right? Like where like there are very precise times where I felt React Native just won't cut it. And that is when I would say, hey, it won't cut it for this reason. That's why I need to use native, right? And that's usually pretty much enough to convince management. Mm-hmm. Why do you use RxJava? Send me a note. I can tell you many, many, many reasons why you should be using RxJava. How to convince the team about it? Honestly, I can tell you what I did. It's literally what Don said, right? I showed two examples of how you can use RxJava to get something done and how you have to do it without RxJava. Usually it gets people convinced that way, right? I can point towards some really complicated examples. I have this open source library that I did for Instacart called TrueTime. I cannot fathom how difficult it would be. My colleague who released an equivalent library on the iOS side, right? He didn't use the Rx variant. And it was really hard. I'm not kidding. Because I was aware of how RxJava worked, I finished building that whole library. The core parts of that library was built over like 2 or 3 days. If you think about how complex that thing is, like how complex it is to actually pull off that NTP and SNTP sort of time protocol, I can't imagine if I had to build it without Rx, I wouldn't even bother because it's that complicated, right? And I mean, that's pretty, like, that was like a clear cut example for me. Like, I was like, oh, wow, there's no way I could not do Rx and build this, right? Usually, and that's also why I started, like, I built up this repository. I have this repository for Rx Java Android samples. It's essentially just that, right? What I would suggest is take some of those examples, try to do it without Rx, see how difficult it would be. And then, like, you know, there you go. You have your examples to convince the team, right? That's how I would approach this one.
All right, so number 16 here, we have a question from Yeet, and the question is, you two should talk about creating a podcast, memorable podcast moments, etc. Gosh, you got any here you could talk about?
Oh, wow. I think we did touch a lot about like creating the podcast, right? Like,
yeah, we did, yeah.
And if you're curious, listen to episode one. I think we do go about why we... I will promise you, Don and I shiver anytime we think about listening to any episode, like, you know, from 1 to 10 or 15, because wow, it's so different. So I would suggest you go listen to it. I don't think we are going to listen to episode one. The content link holds up, but, like, you know, just hearing how naive you were at that time is like hard. That one is, yeah, you can like go ahead and listen to that. Memorable podcast moments. I will say it's hard for me to pick specific episodes, but I will say the times where we have been out of our like natural habitat were pretty interesting. Like the Google I/O ones are always interesting because of, like, you know, how challenging the logistics becomes. Sometimes, yeah, like you're running behind a tree, you're like trying to find, there are like helicopters, you know, there's wind. Yeah. It's just, you know, at the time it seems stressful, but like when I think about it, those are all like pretty memorable moments. And of course, like, you know, you get to meet people, and when it's very different when you're actually looking someone in the eye and asking them a question and getting a response, right? So
yeah,
I would say those are like pretty memorable moments. The other one I remember is, I think, with Jesse Wilson. I was not in my natural habitat. We actually went and recorded in Spec Studios. That one was also a good one, I felt, because it was just so different, right? So the ones that really stick out to me are the ones where I'm not sitting, you know, on my very comfortable chair here. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Exactly. I'm going to take a little bit different spin on the first part of the question here about the talk about creating a podcast, because I recently had this conversation with an individual who wanted to start a podcast, and him and his co-host. And the question is like, all right, we want to start a podcast, but we've recorded a couple of episodes and we're not happy with the way it sounds, and we want to get professional, and, you know, you have any tips for us? And my tip was just ship it. You know, you're never going to be happy with your first few episodes. You're going to look back, and this happens to every single podcast host out there. I mean, all the way back, I think I even heard Tim Ferriss say this recently, where he listens to his original episodes and he winces. It's like, oh goodness, that was bad. And it's going to happen to everybody, because podcasting is a skill that you have to just pick up. It's very awkward. I'm sitting in an empty office with sound foam on the walls, talking into a microphone, looking at a document with questions on it over the phone, trying to realize that I'm talking to a bunch of people and their headphones are in their car. It's just a very weird thing. So you're just going to have to ship it, and you're going to get used to kind of just talking. And if you are going to create a podcast, you know the tools, you know, get audio quality is very important. I can't tell you how many times Kaushik and I have had the conversation of, we'll find a fantastic podcast, has great content, but we have to stop listening to it because the audio quality is so horrendous. It's got to be quality, because no one wants to crank their stereo to max and still they can't hear you and they just hear a bunch of rustling and background noises and beeps going off. Like, that's just really annoying. We try our very best to make sure that we don't allow that to happen. We have had instances where we've had stuff like that happen and we've had to scrap the episode. And that just stinks, but we value audio quality much more. So invest in, you know, in a good quality mic like we have, that's good at removing, that's hiding the background noise. Make sure you try to record in a quiet place. If you don't have a quiet place, put blankets on the floor, put maybe blankets on the wall, build yourself a blanket fort and do it in there. Sure, it's going to be hot, but hey, it's going to sound a lot better. And then, of course, just ship it and be consistent and give yourself the 10 episode minimum, and talk to yourself or your co-host at 10 episodes. Say, hey, do we want to keep doing this? You know, then at least you gave it a good shot. Because I think if you quit right around 3 to 4, then you haven't really kind of worked out any of the kinks. Let's see here. And we have memorable podcast moments. I think some of the memorable ones I always bring up to other folks are, make sure that you have like some type of time cop. This episode is our 100th episode, so it is running a little bit long, but very early on, we had a very bad habit of turning into like 2 to 4 hour episodes that we would have to chopped down to like part one, part two. I don't even know. We might have had a part three one. I don't remember. But because we would talk to, you know, Jake Wharton or Dan Liu or whoever, and we'd talk to those guys for hours. And we would just, we never were able to cut it down. So that's very memorable to us because now we have gotten very religious about, hey, let's make sure that we're under an hour because anything over that kind of gets a little bit too long. And then, of course, the live episodes, like you said, are very, always bring back great memories. IO, I've only done one of those. You've done the other ones. And then, I did DroidCon 2017. And you folks, very similar problems. We were in a very tight area for DroidCon 2017. And the first couple of interviews were out in the open. And then I actually found an empty room that I was able to kind of hop into for the last three interviews. So great, great memories.
All right. Thomas Raikala asks, what makes a good podcast host? What do you wish you knew about podcasting before you started out? And congrats from a day one listener. Wow, thank you so much.
Yeah.
You want to take a shot at those questions?
Yeah, so what makes a good podcast host? This is it's very hard because each person is different and each podcast you listen to is different. You may listen to a personal finance podcast that you love. I'll listen to it and I can't stand it because I don't like the guy's voice or the woman's voice or whatever. Yeah. Or I don't like the way that their intonation or the topic just isn't interesting. So it's really hard to say what makes a good podcast host. I do always feel a little bit of humor is good because I like to be entertained. I'm listening. I don't want it to be really dry. If it's putting me to sleep, I don't want to do that. So we try to make sure that we're not in any of those areas. We want to make this entertaining and fun. But again, it really depends on the podcast and the host that's doing it. If you're listening to a podcast about running, do you want to hear about it from someone who is not a runner? Probably not. It probably wouldn't really make sense. It would just be a really weird dichotomy. Number two, what do you wish you knew about podcasting before you started out? I knew it was going to be a lot of work when I started out. I learned it was a lot more work. But one thing that I wish I knew was about batching. Batching was one of the things that around episode 30 kind of saved us because it allowed us to get some time back in our own lives. And then it didn't feel like a lot of a big chore to do Fragment. It kind of just became this thing that we did every once in a while and it was fun. And then congrats from day one listener. I really appreciate that. I know there's a lot of you that are listening that are day one listeners. Even if you're not a day one listener, you came to us episode 30, 60, 90, or you're just here right now for the first one. Thank you for listening. The fact that you're giving us your ears to listen during any period of your life is I'm completely grateful for, and we hope we make the best of your time.
I'll take a quick stab at some of those questions as well. What makes a good podcast host? I wish I knew. I really wish I did. I can point towards other podcast hosts that I think are pretty good. And, just ping me on Twitter or something and I can tell you some of them. But I'll just quickly throw out some that I can immediately think of. I think Howard Stern is an amazing podcast host. Now, it's a very different take. Sometimes he can say pretty offensive things and he cusses a lot, I think, on his podcast, but I think he's an amazing host. And I think Don, you and I have talked about this, right?
Yeah.
He has this very disarming way of asking questions and getting information out.
He's so good.
Yeah. He's just so good. So, that's the first one I can just hit us up and we can tell you some of the podcast hosts that, we really admire. I listened to this other one called Hello Internet, which is a pretty, good podcast. And I think they're the humor and the chemistry between the hosts, CGP Grey and Brady Heron is just so good. So I like listening. I almost don't expect to learn necessarily anything from that, but I just love listening to them, chit chat. The chemistry there is amazing. So I don't really know, but send me a message and I can tell you some of the ones that I enjoy. And maybe that'll help in some ways. What do you wish you knew about podcasting before you started? I think, Don, you covered this one out. Don said he knew it was going to be a lot of work. I didn't know it was going to be a lot of work, at least that much work. I quickly learned. Episode 2 or 3, I was like, holy cow, that's why we don't have that many podcasts, because this thing is kind of, not very easy.
All right, number 18 here we have from a mug of Java. I guess his name is Ben. We love the handle. Awesome. His question is, what advice would you give someone who wants to move from developing apps as a hobby to doing it pro?
This is such a good question.
It is.
I feel I don't necessarily have that great an answer. You're a crazy dude. You've done some of these things. You've experimented with the whole gamut of fields. So what's your answer? I feel you'll have a better answer to this.
So I think there's a couple of ways that you can look at this question, and it depends on from the stance in which the question is asked. So one of the stances is, maybe you work in construction right now or in project management, but you actually love programming. And so you've been doing programming at home and you've been learning how to write apps at home and it's fun to you. And you've built some apps for your family to keep track of chores for the kids or something like that. And now you really like it and you want to get it to going a pro. What does it look like from that perspective? That's a completely different perspective as if someone were asking this from the stance of, hey, I'm already a programmer and I do Ruby or JavaScript. I want to start doing Android now. What's the best way? So I think I'll try to cover both of those. The first one is if you're coming at this from not being a programmer, I think the best way you can do this is just like you said, had said before, build a sample app. And this could be something you're doing at your home. If it's going to be tracking to-dos, if it's going to be tracking, chores or anything like that, build that. Put it out there and just, iterate on it and build on it. At the same time, you may want to start contributing to some type of open source projects. If you see an open source project out there that you use, it could be a HTTP library, an image library, anything like that. And you may not know how to write the code because the code may be really daunting and really extreme. And I've been in this situation before, but there's always a way to help. And so what you can do is you can reach out to the maintainers of these projects, say, hey, I don't really understand. I use your library. I love it. I don't really see a place I could contribute in regards to the code or bug fix, but you know what? I see the documentation's lacking. Would you mind if I submit, a PR for some documentation? Almost always the maintainers are going to love that because documentation is often neglected. So start contributing even if that way. If it's only documentation, it's going to get your name out there and get you seen. And before you know it, if you continually keep doing these types of things, people are going to notice and eventually you might have some opportunities pop up. Visit meetups. Start talking to other developers. Start talking to people who need apps out there. May want to hop on and do something part-time on the weekend. Like you said, if you have the weekend open, maybe offer that up as like some consulting skills that you can offer to build someone an app on the weekend or your off time. The other stance is, and again, this we could have a whole podcast on this whole topic itself. The other stance is you're already a programmer at a company and you want to move into the mobile team or into mobile and they don't have mobile where you're at. A couple ways you could do this is if there's no mobile app for your company, build one. Be the first person who does it. Automatically, you're going to be the one who's leading that project because you're the only one who knows it. Now, I'm not saying that for job security. I'm saying it because that's a good way to kind of get a foothold in there. And you may find that you build a product that people love. And that's actually how I got started in programming. I was a tech support representative on a Unix dialer. And I started building web apps to help generate reports because I hated generating these reports through shell scripts. And so I just connected to the SQL database through classic ASP and started rendering them on servers and web pages. And boom, then all of a sudden I was doing programming. and furthermore, is if maybe your company doesn't need an app, you can follow a very similar path, start putting out sample apps, open source apps, contributing to open source, start going to meetups, start doing talks on different things. You basically just want to get yourself out there. And then the more you get yourself out there, the more people you're going to meet and the bigger your network gets. And the bigger your network gets, the more opportunities are going to arrive at your doorstep.
All right. So that's basically the questions that we chose. Again, if we didn't answer all of your questions, we apologize. We don't want to take this on for another hour. But we got some great questions. Thank you, listeners, so much for these questions. We really do appreciate fantastic questions. I don't think we could have come up with such good questions if we came up with these ourselves. Thank you so much for those questions. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sticking along with us for these 100 episodes. It means so much to us. This is a labor of love that we do on the side. Honestly, it is purely out of interest that we have done, and the community has been really kind to us. They've appreciated this. We cannot tell you how grateful we are for that. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening, and let's see you on the other side. Episode 101 is going to be next.
See ya.
And before we end the show, once again, I want to take a quick moment and thank Rollbar for sponsoring today's show. With Rollbar, you get error monitoring, the context, insights, and the control you need to find and fix your bugs faster. We have a special offer for Fragmented listeners, and that you can find at the link rollbar.com/fragmented. Sign up there and you get their Bootstrap plan for free. Thanks again, Rollbar.